Welcome to Local Talk Wednesday on KHOI Community Radio, featuring the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host for today, Susan Franzen, introducing Program 3 of the four-part historical series that has developed during the past couple of weeks here on KHOI. The first week, we hosted a roundtable discussion with representatives from historical societies in Story City, Boone, Slater, and Huxley about the founding of their towns. The second week, we continued with a little KHOI history, the development of the road trip as a signature feature on Local Talk. In reviewing the interviews from our first road trip, aired 2 years ago, I could see the value of preserving and repeating stories from people in our area. So my fellow county reporter, Paul Wearson, and I have decided to rebroadcast the first road trip to South Story County for week 3 of this series. In it, you will hear reminiscences from Mildred Brendeland, Monty and Carolyn Sesker, and Nels Nord, who attended high school in the days when the four towns on Ballard Creek, Kelly, Cambridge, Huxley, and Slater all had high schools as well as grade schools. Next week, Paul and I will return for a present-day road trip to find out how the Ballard towns maintain their unique identities while cooperating as a community right up to the present day. But now, please join me for a road trip to the past. I'm your host today, Susan Franzen, and I'm leaving for South Story County. Want to join me on a road trip? We're heading down U.S. 69. We're on our way to talk to Mildred Brendeland, who is one of the oldest residents of Story County. She lives at Ballard Creek Community Assisted Living in Huxley, but she grew up in a farm right here near Kelly. There's the turnoff for Kelly. I'm the rural correspondent for KHOI, and I keep hearing about the Ballard Creek District. Today, I'm going to find out what it is and what's going on in South Story County. Let's start with Mildred, because she can tell us what life was like in the early days. She's 102 years old. Born on a farm near Kelly, is that right?
Yes. And our house burned when I was about 9 months old.
And then what happened?
Well, then my mother carried me over to one neighbor, and we stayed there for one night. And there was an old bachelor that lived to the east of us, and he came over and he said, Mrs. Dearness, he says, I'm a bachelor, and I'm not a very good housekeeper, but you're so welcome to come and live with me, and you can do whatever you want to my house. So we went and lived with him for about a year until the fellow on the land built the house. Down to the barn and want to be with my dad. Sometimes I got to stay, and sometimes I got a swat on the back and said, you go back up to your mother because it's too dangerous down here. And sometimes I got to stay and watch him do whatever he was doing, if it wasn't.
What kind of livestock did you have? Chickens?
Yeah, we had chickens. Mother raised chickens in the little chicken coops, you know. And then later on, she got a brooder house, but that was later. And then we had, Dad had fancy horses.
Milk cow?
Oh, yes, we had milk cows, and we, Dad fed hogs, and he fed feeding stock, hog, cattle. Dad had some fancy horses, and one was with a colt, and he was expecting her, and she died. So he had the little foal, and so he nursed it back so it lived. And then pretty soon it was up to me to feed it the bottle. And so I fed it the bottle, and it got to be such a pet, you know, it followed me all over the place, everything, and then pretty soon there were other people riding horses, and I thought, why don't I ride that horse? It was about 2 years old, I suppose, or maybe, and so I thought, I'll just call it up to the crib and climb up the little things and call the colt over, and I'll get on and ride. So I did, and I was about almost four, and I'd guide it around with the mane, and we'd ride around in the backyard so my mother didn't see me, you know. And so pretty soon I got pretty clocky. So I thought, well, now this time I'll write it up in the family. And my mother about fainted, you know. But I rode that colt until she got pretty fat, pretty cocky. So my dad had to say, that's enough. But I rode it when I was four.
And she never threw you?
No, she was. And when I'd get off, she'd kind of whinner because she wanted me to be running. So I'd go back to the crib, climb down, and pet her and give her maybe a treat or something. Farmed 240 acres, so he was a big farmer. But he lost it during the Depression.
Lost the farm?
What?
Did he lose the farm?
Yeah.
Then what did he do?
He rented a little tiny farm, 80 acres up by Gilbert, and took all his big equipment, and everybody thought he was crazy. But he said, I'll get a big farm next year. And he did. And he made a good living after that.
So that was something that was possible it must have been the Depression.
Oh, yeah.
He lost his farm, but because he could rent one, he could get enough money in a year, because he could keep, what, his equipment and his livestock?
Yeah.
And so he could move and then make enough money in a year to buy a bigger farm.
He made enough money on that so he could make a down payment on the rent. And then he went on from there, and he did very well. And then the war came along, and my brother that was working with him had to go to the service. And then my dad had all that farm to hit. That was another 240 acres. And my dad was, my mother said he worked from dawn to dusk and then from dusk to dawn. He didn't hardly sleep. And so she said, you can't go on like this, you'll kill yourself. And so he wrote to his son that was working for Glen L. Martin's in Maryland and asked for his release to come back and help farm, and he came back. And then my brother worked for him, and then he rented a little 80 acres, and so he and his wife moved on to that.
This is after the war, they got
yes.
the 80 acres. And sometime in there, farming changed, didn't it, during the war?
Yes, it did. My dad got the first tractor.
The first tractor in the county, or?
For him.
For him. He got his first tractor during World War II. Is that right?
Yes.
What did your father use for plowing before he got his tractor?
Two horses, or three horses, I think he used. He had fancy horses and nice equipment.
And how long did he farm?
Well, I suppose till he was, I don't know, 80.
So you saw lots of changes in agriculture in your lifetime.
Oh, yes.
Another thing that I'd like you to tell me is what Saturday night in Kelly was like when you were a little girl.
There wasn't much to it. Just grocery shopping.
Well, how did you get into town?
Horse and buggy.
But
and some people didn't have buggies, so they used their wagon.
What did you do when you got into town?
Well, the women did the shopping, and men maybe had things to buy for their farm. And they visited, got the groceries, and sat on the steps of the stores and listened to the band, and the kids played.
I was told that there were two stores in Kelly. Is that right? You had two or three grocery stores?
That's right.
And more than one general store or hardware store?
No.
Or not? Just one.
And then they had a meat market. And they had a restaurant. And they had a barber shop. And they had a bank.
Quite a little business district.
Oh, yes. It's much better than it is now.
But you only went to Ames a couple times a year to buy special clothes, is
yes.
that right? How was the road to Ames like?
Well, it was like the worst road around here.
What year did you graduate from high school in
1928.
1928. So it was before the Depression really started, or has it already started on the farm?
Oh, it started. Yes, and there wasn't any. My dad took a load of corn to town to buy my prom dress because he said, your mother has made all your clothes and you've never had a bottom dress and I think you deserve a bottom dress. So he took a load of corn and sold that and bought me a dress and shoes for the prom.
So they had proms. How many people were at the prom?
Well, there were 9 in my class, and there were maybe 6 or 7 teachers, and that was about it. And we ate at the Maples Inn at Iowa State, and we never had dates, no dates, just the teachers and the students. And the juniors always furnished the program.
What was the program? Was it entertainment?
Well, they sang, and they talked, and I suppose the thing lasted until maybe 9:30 or 10 o'clock.
But you didn't, did you dance at the prom?
What?
Did you dance at the prom?
Oh, no. We didn't do silly things like that.
So after you graduated, what did you do?
Well, then I started looking for a job. While I went to college, I went to Forest City for a semester.
And what happened when you wanted to go to the second semester?
Well, that's when this bachelor friend of my father was very wealthy. He had a farm. He had money. He just had everything. And my dad said, go there, he'll give you money. Well, I did. And I said to Ole, I said, I need some money to go to college. I wonder if you'd loan me some money. Well, he says, I know that would be nice to go to college. But, he says, I'm not going to loan you any money because you'll go 2 years, and the first thing you know, you'll be out there, and you won't get a job, and I won't get my money. So that was that. I came home and married this young man that picked me out when I was in fourth grade and never dated another girl because I was it. And I married him. And when I moved into and we were going to live with his mother, and I didn't like that. And I told him, I said, either you tell your mother that I'm going to be the lady of the house, or it's no, I'm not marrying you. And he says, I can't do that. And I said, well, either or else. And so in about a couple of weeks, when he came back smiling, and he says, my mother, I told her, and she just hollered. She said, hip hooray. She said, I don't have to keep house anymore. I've kept house for 8 children, and I'm ready to retire. And she says, she can do anything she wants to, make anything, any arrangements, anything she wants to. So this is her house. And that was the beginning of my life in Kelly.
So, and did you find there was a lot of work in that house?
Well, yes, I didn't do anything the first year. I was trying to be real gracious. But the second year, the Davenport was terrible. I couldn't hardly stand it. And so one day I was tearing it apart, and my husband says, what are you doing? I says, I'm going to reupholster this Davenport. And he said, why, that's better than nothing. He said, you'll just ruin it. I said, well, a ruined one is better than this. And when I finished, he thought it was the most elegant thing he'd ever seen. So that was the beginning of my reupholstering and sewing.
And did you have to cook for a lot of people in this house?
Yes, he had a lot of family.
So you did take over for his mother, is that right?
Yes.
And you didn't mind?
No, I didn't, because she was a sweetheart. I couldn't have asked for a nicer mother-in-law. Okay, when I got married, I was married 2 years, and then I had one boy, and then 2 years later, I had another. And when he was 6, he was going to go to school, and then I was at home, and some of the mothers around there came to me and wondered if I would open up a lunchroom in Kelly. And I said, oh, my land, no, I couldn't do that. I had a family to take care of. And they said, well, if you just open it and work a month or so, and we'll find a cook. Well, that worked out real well. But I worked there for 28 years and never found a cook. And I liked the job because I was always home at 3 o'clock. And I could cook a nice dinner for my husband and my children.
Was the lunchroom mostly for the children, or was it for everybody in town?
Oh, no, just for the children and the teachers.
And what kind of meals did you fix for them?
Very good.
Did they get roast beef? Did they get chicken?
Oh, yes, because the government gave us food, and they gave us all kinds of supplies, so we had very good menus. And when the kids would leave Kelly and go to Huxley, they'd come up there to my place and they'd say, "Our food is terrible down here." So I had a nice compliment.
So did you cook mostly for the high school, or did you cook for all the schools?
Well, I cooked for the high school for 1 year, and then it went to Huxley.
I see.
And then the rest of the time it was elementary.
So did you cook there as long as they had an elementary in Huxley?
No, not as long. No, I retired.
Did they still have a lunchroom after you retired?
Yeah, but it wasn't the kind that I had. They complained.
They still couldn't find a good cook.
No.
Susan Franzen on KHOI's Local Talk. Wow, that really transported me to another time. I want to know more about how things got started here in South Story County. Mildred, like everybody in her generation, had a Norwegian heritage. Let's drive across town and talk to Nels Nord to learn about the history of this place. I'll let him introduce himself.
I lived in Huxley all my life, 71 years, except for when I was in the Marine Corps for a short time. So.
And you're a former mayor.
Former, I was a police chief and on the police department for 35 years, and mayor for 8 years, and head of the Huxley Historical Society. My dad was a doctor in this area.
Yes.
Dad came to Cambridge and was a doctor there, started his office there, and then he bought a house and 12 acres over here in the central part of Huxley. And my dad was a Swede, full-blooded Swede. And my mom was dark-haired, brown-eyed. She was French, and she was Catholic. And she wasn't very well accepted at first because of being a Catholic in the Lutheran community. When they moved here in 1940, we were the only non-Norwegian people in Huxley at that time. So, you know, Story County was pretty much Norwegian.
Every child in the school had a Norwegian ancestor. I mean, I guess except you.
Yeah.
But that was before you came.
Oh, heavens, yes. Yeah, look at here. Here's a school, and it's called Huxley Norway 1. These were schools. Now, this was in 1910 or 12, somewhere in there. Look at there. They had schools every 2 miles.
Oh, this was the country schools.
Country schools. They never had a high school till 1921. They first immigrated to the Fox River Valley in Illinois from different provinces in Norway. And then they sent 3 or 4 people to the Huxley area to scout out the land, because you could buy the land for $1.25 an acre. I think there was 105 people came to Huxley from that settlement in Illinois. So they came here, and they really, you know, it was fantastic. You know, there's a lot of prairie grass and a lot of animals where they could hunt and have their food and stuff. And then later on, there were more of them wanted to come here, but there's no land. So then they headed up north into around Story City, Roland, that other town up there, Randall. That's where a lot of them went and settled and bought land. And they settled this land for $1.25 an acre. First thing they did was built a little kind of a outdoor shed with a little roof on it to have their first church, you know, out there in Palestine. That was the first church.
Slater certainly was founded where it was because of the railroad. But
yeah, that's why Slater and Shell are so, you know, close together.
And Cambridge in 1930 was twice the size of Huxley.
Yeah. You know, it was quite a community, but it really dwindled after the 60s.
So after
consolidation.
Yeah. So consolidation was a real turning point in every way.
Yeah,
not just for the schools.
Yeah, it's for the towns, because it probably made Huxley what it is today. I mean, if they wouldn't have had the high school here, you know, I don't know if it would have really taken off. Maybe later on, but so, you know, and then Huxley really took off.
Before that, well, you gave me this this paper. It was a
400 and 50 maybe 1960. Look at 60.
486, and then it jumped in a, it doubled, more than doubled, in 10 years.
Yeah, and now it's 3,600.
Yes. So first there were the farmers, just the farmers, and they established the towns. When did Huxley start being a town?
Probably in 1870, somewhere in there.
So it really...
It had a few houses in it, you know, because Cambridge was kind of the trading center forever, for the whole...
Cambridge, and according to this, also Kelly.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so the roads then were just dirt roads. And pretty hard to get to. So when did they start having the change to better roads?
Oh, probably in the 30s.
You had what, gravel roads or paved roads?
They had gravel roads. Even 69 was gravel until the 30s.
Until the 30s.
Yeah.
So the big change would have been in the 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And then people could easily get to Ames.
Ames, from Ames to Des Moines.
Yes.
Because that was U.S. Highway 69.
Thank you.
This is Local Talk on KHOI, and I'm Susan Franzen. Today we're on a road trip exploring Story County. We're back on 69, but not for very long. We'll head down to the second Casey's and turn left. Not the first Casey's. The first time I came here, I made that mistake and got lost. Be sure to turn at the second Casey's going south. Oh, did I tell you that we're going to a farm right outside of Cambridge? We're going there because Cambridge used to be the biggest town in the area. Monty and Carolyn Sesker will tell you about it. They were both delivered by Nels Nord's father.
I'm Monty Sesker.
And Carolyn. We're longtime Cambridge residents. Actually, we live in the country. Our road is the city limit. So
this was my grandfather's farm that we bought from his estate in, about what?
66.
40-some years 60, ago now.
Maybe 66.
So it is a century farm. My grandfather bought it in the early 1900s. This has been our home for much of our my life. We bought it in, what year was that?
About 66.
1966. And then we moved over in about 1967. It was almost a year after we purchased it.
Okay.
We considered for a long time whether to buy a home in Ankeny or West Des Moines or somewhere in, a little closer to our work. We both worked in Des Moines, but as time went on, we decided we really enjoyed it here, and life was pretty good. We both dealt with people during the week, and budgets, and deadlines, and this was a good place to come during the week, in the evenings and weekends. So.
You are the historian of Cambridge. Are you active in the Historical Society?
No, but not really. A younger man in town is kind of the chair of that, but I've been involved with that, and we've done a couple of interviews to recall old times in Cambridge. And when I was a youngster in Carolyn, Cambridge was quite a little trade center. There were Saturday nights you couldn't find a place to park on Main Street. Well, we had a movie theater at one time as well, and it was a very active, thriving, busy community when we were young. Yeah, we looked forward to going town on Saturday night, and you paid a nickel to go to the movie, and I think it got up to a dime, and then we had nickel popcorn.
I think it was 15 cents
was
at one time.
The Main Street is actually Water Street. Main Street is a block west of that because they thought the city was going to grow, or the trade district was going to grow. All the storefronts when we were young were filled with, we had two grocery stores, a hardware store, implement dealership, a lumber yard, the cooperative, of course, as every town has. A couple of blacksmiths. My dad was a small manufacturer and had a business in Cambridge. We had three gas stations, a Packard dealership, two garages to work on cars. Actually, we lay claim to the first doll store. The father lived here for a bunch of his life and had a store in town. There was a clothing store, a couple of restaurants.
Drugstore.
Doctor's office. The same doctor delivered both of us and about everybody else at our in the area, the Huxley Slater Cambridge area. Most of the babies that are now in their 70s were delivered by him. Dr. Nord was the.
Oh, it was Dr. Nord. So he's Nels Nord's.
Yes, Nels Nord's dad. Mm-hmm. Huh? Yeah, he was our local doctor.
They lived in Huxley, but his office was in Cambridge.
And why would that be? Since
because Cambridge was the center at that time. Yeah. Huxley was only a town of 300 or 400.
400 Norwegians. And
how big was Cambridge?
A little over 700.
Probably.
Hasn't changed a lot, maybe grown a little.
Why was this the largest town?
Well, we had a canning factory. And this is the only, I believe this is the only place in the state, which was important at the time, where two heavy railroad lines crossed. The one has since become a bike trail that goes by our farm.
But the other one is still in existence. Is it used often?
Oh, yes. There are a lot of traffic. Mm-hmm. It goes through Ames, in between Ames and Nevada. Mm-hmm.
So, the evolution of the town, at what time did that make a significant change?
The change for Cambridge came when the school was consolidated. And obviously at that time as well, the highways were improved, easier to travel to Ames as the community center in Nevada, and Des Moines. So, gradually business diminished and it evolved as more of a bedroom community. The other thing that impacted Cambridge, as well as most communities across the state, was that modern agricultural technology reduced the need for as many farmers. When I was young, my grandfather raised a few beef cattle, had a small milking herd, chickens, and quite a few hogs. So he could made a pretty good living at that. As technology evolved, and as you're quite aware, and everyone that's listening knows, bigger tractors, bigger machinery, fewer livestock, more confinement operations, livestock concentrated and on fewer farms, made a big difference in the small communities all across the state, as trade centers, primarily anyway. And some of those that aren't as close to major communities, Cambridge and Huxley and Slater and Kelly, are fortunate being centered between Ames and Ankeny and close to Des Moines. There's work opportunities for people outside of agriculture. There's still a lot of farmers around. There's still quite a few farms, even though they're bigger, and the farmers travel greater distances to farm land. They rent land in another county, even. So,
a lot of the people that live in the country are not farmers.
Yeah,
live outside the communities by choice.
When I was young, there was three houses on this mile, and they were all farms. And now there was a new house built in about 100 years, I don't think. And now we have, three new homes in just this 1 mile of gravel road.
Four
new houses. Mm-hmm. So most of them would be an acre or two or three or four, but not large acreages.
You and your children went to school in Cambridge?
That's correct. And I started here in the second grade. And my mother was taught school in White Oak and Alleman, and then finally in Cambridge for 40 years. And she had me as a student in kindergarten and first grade. And then our our grandchildren, or our children, were her students. Our grandchildren represent sixth generation Cambridgeites on both sides of our family. And she had them, taught them, she loved to teach reading, and she taught them to read, so.
You do remember then the school that has now been turned into apartments in Cambridge.
Oh, yes, yeah. That's where we both went to school most of our academic life.
Yeah.
I graduated in 1958, and that was the last class to graduate, to walk across the stage in Cambridge. The big change for Cambridge came when the school was consolidated, and the location chosen was Huxley primarily because of Highway 69. And I think that was when Cambridge started to evolve as a more of a bedroom community.
Well, I think I mentioned to you on the phone a little bit, actually the consolidation took place in 1957. So the classes of 1957 lay claim to be the last independent schools. But in 1958, when Monty graduated, we were Ballard, but their claim is they were the last ones to walk across the stage. And then in 1959, we went to school in Huxley, and it was the first class to graduate as a community.
We argue, like she said, between the class of 57 and 1958, but all six of our graduates in 1958 lay claim to being the last class.
Obviously, a lot has happened since then.
Yeah.
The school saw as their mission to create and maintain the balance of among the communities. So Huxley, although it's the biggest community, doesn't have a great school. They consciously have all of the third or kindergarten through third in Slater and the upper elementary in Cambridge. By having the children together, from all the communities together, from kindergarten on, they bond with each other, so there isn't a distinction.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
That's true.
Exactly.
I would agree with that. We've always had a good sense of community in Cambridge. And Slater is the same way, and Huxley is the same way, and Kelly. And we're kind of a close-knit four-community area, actually. We played baseball and basketball against each other and when we were in high school, and we were avowed competitors on the field, but once the game was over, we were mostly friends. We played American Legion baseball, and that included Slater and Cambridge.
Monty never minds going to my Ballard class reunion because he knows the guys anyway almost as well as I did because he played baseball and basketball with them.
And
I think our grandchildren don't even think about the separate communities.
No.
They are Ballard. And this one, they may have to run to Slater, they may run to Kelly, they may run to Huxley, but they're just Ballard kids.
I don't know, and you know, we have a lot of friends in Huxley and Slater and Kelly, and it's just a very, very, very good area to live in. Cambridge, and I'm sure Slater and Huxley residents say the same thing. It's been a terrific place to grow up. When we were young, we didn't lock the doors. We'd go out of the house, and I remember my dad saying he'd leave the keys in the car, and he'd say, well, if somebody needs it worse than I do, I don't want them bothering me. But Slater and Cambridge and Kelly and Huxley, I think they were all good communities, good areas to grow up. I had ponies and opportunities a lot of city kids didn't have, but, of course, the city kids had a few opportunities that I didn't get to enjoy as well. So I guess it's where you grow up is home.
Yeah. Where you grow up is home.
And it's kind of unusual for us to be here this many years. But
we like living in a small town because I always say we live in the middle of nowhere, but we can be almost anywhere in a half an hour. I mean, we can be in Ames in 15 minutes and Ankeny in 15 minutes, and Ankeny anymore is 40 minutes from the airport. Interstate 35 is here. We can go anywhere we want, but it's a good place to land when we come home.
Cambridge was really a thriving community, and in terms of of residence. I think in its own way it still is, and I hope we'll continue.
Thank you very much.
As I leave the Seskers, I'm curious to see the old high school they attended. It's still standing. It's had a few other uses in the meantime. The old brick high school became the grade school. When the new grade school was built, the building was repurposed yet again as apartments. I know someone who lives there. There he is now.
He's a DJ for one of our shows here at KHOI, Ron Latson. Ron, say hello to the...
Hello.
Yeah. Do you want to give a little plug?
I produce and DJ the R&B music show Soulful Express, and it comes on Wednesday nights from 10 till midnight.
We have a special connection to the towns on Ballard Creek. We have two DJs. You're one of them. The other is BJ Kearns, who does Evening with Elizabeth. And Ron is from Cambridge.
I will be staying out there for many, many years. I like that area. I've lived out in Cambridge for about 2 years now. I just really love living out there. It's a great community. I mean, Cambridge is close to Ames. And it takes me about 15 minutes to get to work, and it's really close to Ankeny, and it's really close to Des Moines. So it's in a perfect location where we're situated at. And I like living in Cambridge because the people are nice out there. They're very friendly. And it's a really, really close community. And my daughters really love the school system out there, the Ballard school system. And me and my family, we live in the old converted schoolhouse. It's the old schoolhouse where they turned it into about 15 apartments in that building right now.
This is an example of repurposing an old building, your apartments in the old school.
Yes, and like I said, we lived out there for 2 years, and when we moved in, it was a work in progress, and the new landlords and the new owners have come in, and they renovated about 4 of the apartments, and they're really, really nice apartments out there. And I have a lot of friends who they'll come visit me and they'll be in my apartment. I live in apartment 12 on the top floor. And they'll be like, I remember taking classes in this and right in this room right here. And this was my English room and this was my history room. And I remember, you know, the gym is over there and we did all the stuff. And I'm like, wow, you know, I actually know people that attended school there. So it's really, really nice. I think that should be done to a lot of these old schoolhouses and school buildings because it gives people pride in their community, and it also gives the community a place to say that we had this old building and we're not going to demolish it. It's going to be something that will go on and live on and serve another purpose besides being an actual schoolhouse. So, you know, they convert it into something that is usable. I love that area.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for joining me on my road trip to Southern Story County. The people we've visited today have described a lot of changes in agriculture, transportation, and education, but their heritage is still important to them. It's no longer necessary to be Norwegian to be welcomed into the community, though. Even a newcomer can be part of its history.
Dirty breeze. Just imagination, relax. Everything's the same back in my little town.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Today, we have been visiting with our neighbors in Southern Story County, the four towns of Huxley, Cambridge, Kelly, and Slater. We've been speaking with Mildred Brendelant, Monty and Carolyn Sesker, Nels Nord, and Ron Latson. Producers for this show are Ursula Rudenberg and Sarah Hegland. Local Talk is engineered by Richard Morrison. Music you heard included The Fisherman by Leo Kottke, My Little Town by Simon and Garfunkel, Norwegian folk music The Water Lily by Annbjørg Lien. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD The Ballad of Kate Shelley. You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. And see listings of our past guests and resource contact information. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. If you would like to join the team as a reporter, contact us through our website, khoifm.org. Your participation as audiences makes KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and see you again on the radio. This is the end of our archived program, recorded in January of 2013. Next week's Local Talk will tell what happened to these towns after school consolidation in 1958. Was it like the words of the song, "Nothing but the dead and dying in my little town," or, in the words of a 2015 local publication, "a vibrant and conveniently located part of the Golden Circle"? Did community feeling die, or was it transformed into something new? Tune in next week to learn about the Ballard Way.